This is episode 175, recorded November 16th, 2022. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Today, we welcome age group triathlete, Dan Gerald. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Joe. How are you doing?
Very, very well. So, I'm trying to work back. Have we been working together about 5 years? Is it about 5 years?
Yeah, five, possibly six, actually, depending. I was trying to think about this the other day, because I knew you'd probably ask. You helped me get ready for Ironman Sweden. That was the first race we did together. And that was in 2016, although it doesn't like it was quite that long ago. So I reckon six, I'm going to credit you with 6 years.
Yeah. Was it quite late in the prep for Sweden? Have I got that right? Or was that not the case? Or would it have been a few months and then we can't remember?
I think it was the season before we did Ironman Sweden. So that would have been 2015. I did my first middle distance. This is before you were coaching me.
Yeah.
I did my first middle distance up at Ironman Staffordshire. And I can remember at that point, that 70.3 was my goal. So yeah. having looked up all the distance doubling that, you know, people who in our sport start sprint often, don't we? And then redouble down on ourselves. Could I do the next? Could I do the next?
Yeah.
The plan was to do that 70.3. And of course, you know exactly what you know, but most people listening will also know what happens. You finish your first 70.3 and immediately you think, could I do an Ironman? And at that point, somewhere quite close to the race, I thought, I'd really like to, but having done that one, that's actually really quite hard work. And I cannot see, couldn't translate in my mind how I would get from being prepared for that distance to doing twice the distance. I think it was probably in the autumn of 2015, autumn, winter 2015, and then you probably had spring to get me ready, spring, summer, 16 to help get me ready.
Yeah, so this is kind of a drill down to, you know, what we sort of learned about that process. Because I think this is, for the most part in triathlon, certainly, you know, the development of the, you know, medium half Ironman to long course, full distance scenario seems to be where most of the sport is going. I understand there'll be people that are listening, you know, that are sprint triathletes or duathletes, but for the most part, there seems to be a big push. It's not that everyone should feel as though they should go in that way. But I think, you know, there's a lot of people doing it. And because it is so much longer and difficult to do, I think there's some probably really good pass on. So give us a brief kind of background as to yourself and where you came into the sport of triathlon.
So do those in the order you asked them. So I live in Suffolk. I've got three teenage sons and I own and run a couple of service supply businesses in the construction sector. So I'm quite, you know, generally quite busy with family. You know what it's like yourself with your kids, ferrying them around, helping them to meet all of their commitments that they have made. I've got quite a demanding work life. I've got quite a big team across a couple of businesses, lots of clients, lots of shifting sands and things moving and changing and causing me to need to refocus. So that's a kind of the sort of general background, probably not dissimilar to many people who do this sport. There are loads and loads of competing demands for time and energy in life and in work, and on top of that we all decide that we want to do quite a demanding long distance endurance sport with its addictive qualities and all the gear and all of the rabbit holes to go down. So we fill our time up massively with all of these little bits and pieces, and sometimes that can get I can get really quite difficult to navigate, I think. From a sports point of view, I'm 48 now and I found triathlon at the year I turned 40, so probably, I don't know whether it's a midlife crisis type thing, but coming up to 40, I was not in brilliant. I was in quite poor physical shape. I hadn't done any exercise really properly or sport or anything since I left school. So I'd had a couple of decades of being pretty inactive. I wasn't particularly healthy. I had quite a stressful life at that point, so my stress levels were quite high. I was overweight. I ate badly. I drank too much. I was like many people in their late 30s. And my brother, who's a bit younger than me, suggested that we should do a triathlon. To be honest, I don't know where the suggestion came from to him, but he probably more than I did quite a lot of charity work, fundraising for a local hospice that looked after our mum. And his challenge for that year was to do a triathlon. You know Nick, of course, don't you? So he's pretty active. So you can I kind of blame him. He started the ball rolling, and I thought, you know what? Given the backdrop I've just explained, I could probably do with a shock to the system to kind of get me moving. And he picked a sprint triathlon local to where we live in Suffolk. I can't remember exactly which one now. And then we managed somehow to talk that up to being three sprint triathlons. I think somewhere in there was a theory that we do a try of tries. I think that might have been how he span it when he got people to sponsor us to do it. But we picked three sprint triathlons, two small local ones. I think one might have been at Stowmarket, which is a little market town in Suffolk. I think one possibly at Fritton Lake, if anybody's local to here. That was a nice little sort of off-road triathlon, private lake sort of thing. And then we finished off by doing the sprint distance at the ITU London Hyde Park as a kind of, the sort of epic swan song of the fundraising. And we did it, we taught ourselves to swim a little bit, taught ourselves to bike a little bit, taught ourselves to run a little bit, and had a crack at it. I found actually I really enjoyed it. I really liked the something new part of it. And I've, obviously from someone who goes from inactivity to activity, there's so many benefits physically and mentally that it becomes something, if it clicks, it becomes something that you want to continue with. So that's where it and that's where it started. And I think that was 8 or 9 seasons ago. So it was probably in my 40th year was the first time I did a triathlon, and it was Nick's fault, is what I'm saying.
Right. You'll have to find out anything you can, any finishers t-shirts, any results from that initial triathlon. Because I think, when it's done something such that it's been an amazing enzyme, okay, you've got as you say, Nick to blame, nudging you along, that kind of direction and an initial kind of firing up is great, because everyone comes in from a slightly different angle. But as you've hinted on, and know, and anyone listening or anyone that's occasionally done stuff and sort of dabbles, there are people that are hardcore into it, and there are people that dabble and sort of come back and say, oh, I'm going to do a triathlon this year, I haven't done one for 5 years, do this, do that. I think they soon realize that though you don't have to be training yourself 20 hours a week, actually, if you can do your 4, 5, 6, 7 hours a week and you really get all the health benefits and you dovetail it into your life, then actually, why wouldn't you want to do something that has outdoor activity? It doesn't always have to end with a personal best, but there's this sense that, of course, the moment that you got into that, wow, this feels good, then that created its own self-fulfilling sort of prophecy.
Absolutely. I don't want to say a monster, but I think at the start probably did create a bit of a monster, because I've almost finished those first races thinking, and looking at the looking around at all the people who were much fitter, much faster, or who were doing a sprint try as a warm up to perhaps an Olympic, and thinking, my God, these people are superhuman. How on earth can they do this for twice as far? And then obviously I'd heard previously about years before about Iron Man, and I just chalked it off as some kind of insane pursuit for the, you know, very naturally gifted few out there, you know, Bondi Beach, chiseled type athletes who are able to do superhuman feats like that. But having finished a few sprints, and I think maybe it's character thing for me, having finished a few sprints, I wasn't like, oh my goodness, thank God that is done, I'll go back to the pub roast. It was, oh, well, if I can do a sprint, I wonder, could I do an Olympic?
Having
no idea really how that might go. And that's pretty much the shape it took for me. And every time I did the next distance or style of race, the questions immediately, well, can I do the next one? And I think when I did the first sprint, I'd heard of Ironman racing. And thought, you know, this sort of dual conversation internally, like, wouldn't it be great if, but also there's no way I could do that. And they, like a lot of things, I guess, actually, you can, most people can. What did Iron Man say? It's all,
Everything is possible.
Which, yeah, you know, everything is possible.
Yeah. And to some degree, that, you know, that's the nature of, you didn't say, some people do, you know, they see Ironman, they accidentally run into it because they're, you know, they're on holiday in Hawaii, they're in Bolton, they're in some, you know, small town in France, and they see something and ask people and sort of say, oh, well, what's this? And that's how I found out about triathlon. I was working in a pub. I was washing up. I was a late teenager up, looking out the back window, saying, "What's that down there?" Someone said, "Oh, I think there's a triathlon in Bath." And it was only about 5-6 miles out of Bath. I said, "Oh, right." Now, I'd already bought magazines about triathlon. It intrigued me to think, "Oh, this looks interesting." Yeah. And you know, you never know where these things go. And I think sometimes the fun of just doing a sprint is, nobody says you have to go further, but if it really resonates with you and it's something that actually does build a healthier person, and that's across, you know, internal and external, and of course there's a bell-shaped curve there, you can go too far and start to, you know, detrimentally impact things, but for a lot of people, they find that sweet spot, and it may not be that they ever, you know, transgress all the way to Ironman, but they get this benefit from multi-sport. And I think, like you've said, and a lot of people say, the fact you mix up different things together makes it fun, because you're not just, for example, cycling every day or running every day or going to the pool every day. You actually mix it up. You can throw in some running. You can do an ultra. You can do something where you know, swim, you know, some great distance between islands and do it as a holiday. I mean, there's weird and wonderful places people can take this, but I think it's quite amazing when you ask people about the start of where it came. It's very often not, I want to be, you know, the best in my age group and you know, and go to Roth and break 10 hours or go to Australia and win it when I'm you know, when I'm 40 or whatever. It tends to be a much more subtle build. And I think that then tends to go with the flow of your body gets used to this. Because if you've been sedentary and you ramp it up too much, there are a lot of problems waiting in the background that gradually say, hold on a minute, you've ramped up and your body wasn't used to this. Whereas if you do the sprints and you go through, particularly with older athletes, that progression has to be gradual. Younger athletes can throw anything at them and they tend to, you know, bounce off it. Whereas as people come into this, particularly if they say, oh, I've seen, you know, the number of times people contact and say, oh, I've just seen Ironman Wales, I want to do that next year. And you're like, right, where are you at the moment? Because it may be that, you know, you're just going to literally get around that thing because you've never done anything like it. I guess back at you then, what do you think, if you look at that first bit of training that you and your brother Nick did, and you were sort of trying to get ready for this sprint try, what do you think is say some of the important things that you've learned over the last, you know, 6 years in terms of the things that you would or wouldn't necessarily have done, which you can see other age group triathletes might either fall foul of or might do and say, do you know what? I think that is what we should be doing.
Oh, okay. That's a massive question. I think I can speak for myself better than I can for other people. Early on, definitely, I trained too hard, too fast or too heavy or too much. And when I first started, I was injured all the time. I think you put it politely, I think you said when you're sedentary and come into exercise, I'll take that. So coming from a sedentary point of view into exercising in three different sports, none of which you really know anything about, and particularly the running. I mean, I was unfit and heavy, so I got a lot of early stress fracture, metatarsal stress fractures, and pulled this and ligament issues and things, because I just thought, well, you put on a pair of trainers and you run pretty much run as fast as you can, and then that'll make you a better runner. That couldn't be. So you've educated me. That couldn't be further from the truth. So one of the things I definitely found is just doing too much too soon, and not listening at all to how you feel when you're doing stuff. Somehow saying, well, I feel tired, or I feel hurt, or I don't feel motivated for that, and saying, ah, get over it. You've decided, downloaded a plan off the internet, or you've, just stitched together what you think it should be, and that's what it says. So you've got to go with it. So I definitely think overtraining is something that I did, and I think possibly something other people might fall into. Are there good habits in there as well, of course. And I guess one of the other things was when I first started, I thought that there'd be massive gains just from focusing on stuff, or by getting a new bit of kit, or by getting a I remember when I bought my first TT bike. I didn't really know what I was doing, and ended up buying something that was wholly inappropriate. I was quite uncomfortable on, and probably fairly unsafe on. They didn't really make any difference, and it's quite a letdown, when you talk yourself into, this one thing is going to suddenly make me fast or not hurt. It's actually so is it Brailsford, the marginal gains thing? It's so true. A bit of work constantly on a lot of fronts actually combines into big change. You don't get big change from a silver bullet.
No, I think that's, that's, it's a hard one, isn't it? Not to, I suppose, with the naivety of not knowing about these things, it could be very easy to, yes, just throw good money after bad, or more importantly, like you've said, and I can't reiterate this enough, people to sort of push themselves and think, no, it's all about, if I went yesterday at 10 minute mile, and well, today I better do at least 9:45, or I'm not fitter. And I think there's this, that there's this push your body. That is how it develops. No, it'll develop by actually doing quite low level, especially if you've been sedentary. Quite low level things will immediately make changes. No, they won't make you immediately able to race faster or as fast as you'd like, but I think that as fast as you like is always a little bit out of our reach, and
I agree with that.
and particularly when the data, and I'm not always looking for the data that proves, oh, this proves the model, but what I can't see is things that disprove it and say, do you know what, everyone's wasting their time by being patient and thinking, like you said, listening to your body, thinking about what you're doing. You know what? It's you go out there and you hammer yourself, and everyone else that's doing steady work is just kidding themselves. It's not the case. It's actually a case of, do you know what? Listen to your body. You can have enjoyment. You can have awareness of your environment and of other people's needs, so that you're not always trying to race them. You can actually be saying, oh, I can slow down, and I can slow down today. That's fine. Yeah, we don't have to do, 18 miles an hour. If you feel tired and it ends up being 16, what the hell? It's still 16 miles an hour. Do you know what I mean? And I think that is probably what the beginner, or maybe even the improver that lacks the confidence in the process, actually, what's the default human thing? I'm just going to push it as much as I can, because that can be the only way in order to get the most out of myself. And if I don't, oh Lord, I'm being lazy. Oh, I'm going to miss all these gains because everybody else is out there. You know, if the secret science of training said, you know what, every famous person you can think of, all they do is just push themselves really hard all the time. That's the secret. Be like, oh, I never thought of that one. You know, it's almost like, you know, you think about train obvious training ideas. I know, I'll just go longer every day and I'll try and go faster every day. And although that sounds ridiculous, the number of times people catch themselves and say, oh yeah, my average speed is a bit lower. I hate average speed. I know it's one of those things where it might be noted in the background, but you can't force it to go in the direction you want, particularly where we are right now in November. Most people have been fit. You know, we obviously, you know, measure it and other people can measure it. You can see your sub-maximal ability. Get up to 200 watts on your bike or run at a, you know, a 10-minute mile on a treadmill and see what your heart rate level's out at. And it should be getting a little bit worse at the moment because we haven't got a half Ironman for you to do. We haven't got an Ironman. You've got loads of other things to balance. And I think the amateur and the number of times I get questionnaires from people that start coaching, what do you want to do in the first 6 weeks? Oh, I want to get my 10K time down. You know, you're thinking, hold on a minute.
Yeah, why?
It's October and you think I can get you faster by the end of the year. Why does that not seem absolutely bizarre? When you know the bigger picture, that just seems bizarre to think, right, you're going to go for immediately this short-termism of you know, right, let's go really fast now because I'm sure that's the way to do it. So I don't think that is. Most of the time, I would say a coach's job is putting reins on people and holding them back because there's no way a coach should be motivating people. That should come from within. You know, that's your passion and your direction from within. It can't be from a coach from outside.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's you definitely worked with me loads at the start of our coaching relationship about reining in sessions that I would normally do that largely they're worthless, and building a consistent base. I think some of it's counterintuitive until you've got the experience or evidence for yourself. Particularly for me, I'm quite an evidence-based sort of person. Even when we first started, I was like, Joe, help me. I want to get to here. What should I be doing? And you'd say X, Y, and Z. And I'd say to you, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, I can fully trust you know what you're talking about. There's a voice inside me saying, no, actually, that can't be right. Because he's saying, like, do less, go slower. But you want to go further, go faster. So there you have to make, I did with you, to make a leap of faith and follow what you're saying, first of all, and then the evidence takes a little while, but the evidence definitely comes through if you are looking for it. And the way we work, because we write everything down each week and we review it each week, it's really easy to flick back to certain periods and track, you know, how we were training and what was going on and what outcomes and how we felt from that because we recorded it all. But you definitely need to have a big picture view as much as you do a sort of micro view on the, you know, the individual sessions and the day-to-day and the week-to-week. You also kind of need, well, I certainly do anyway, I need like a bigger picture so that you can have a look at overall trends in how you're feeling, how you're racing, how fit you are, how mentally strong you're feeling. And those things do track back to keeping a good record and building that consistent base work and sidestepping that sort of naturally counterintuitive thing that you need to train slower to be able to race faster. But it's definitely true.
Yeah, and perhaps that's the biggest leap of faith that you had to actually do, was that you had to say, oh right, I need to slow down. But then on the other, you know, on the other side of it, and I hope it's always from a performance and also from a feeding the part of you that does want to push yourself, when we have those, right, you know, these are your adversity interval run blocks that actually, you know, you get round to then enjoying that, oh, this is the hard work that I like and it helps me. And I think that's possibly where holding back early on and being nurtured then gives you the sense that when it's ready, And when you're, you know, mentally in a better place because you've got used to the rigors of just day-to-day training, you can go up into, you know, fourth and fifth gear and feel as though your fitness allows you to bounce off those sessions rather than early on. I suspect that, you know, lots of sessions when you were doing that sprint try were sort of, you know, fairly hell for leather, whether it was against you, whether it was, you know, you and Nick racing, or whether it was just a sense that you saw somebody and thought, right, I need to meet that person today. That, you know, those things, when you're not very fit, and with the greatest of respect, we can all be at that point, actually, it's really hard work to try and do hard work.
Oh, boy.
You know, whereas when you are fit and the consistency and the level to which you can, well, at the deep down level, process lactate, deal with the discomfort, engage the muscles in a coordinated way. Actually, hard work feels like you just want to suck it up and it's great. And you go, yeah, that's really good. And hence why if somebody doesn't feel great, is even unwell. The hard work just feels so disproportionately hard. If you were listening to your body, you'd go, why the hell do I want to do that right now? And that's the funny thing about some people's psychology. I don't think I'm training a physiology ever. I understand that bit. I'm trying to work out the psychology, because that's where some people, you think, do you know what? That person, there's so many traits that they are just a self-destruct person. And the hardest thing is going to be to override that. That's almost become part of their personality. Do you see what I mean? And you're not, totally. You know, I have lots of different people. You're very, this is what I do. You know, I think I've done it right. I feel this is going great. Not quite sure about that, but I think it's going to come around again. And you actually kind of are very good at being, not critical, but being very, able to look at what you're doing, and also sometimes throw in things where I think, I wonder if we need to do that or not. So, you know, it's that, it isn't that, oh, I don't really think about this. I'll do it anyway, but I don't really think it's going to work. You know, that kind of pessimism, or that kind of, I think, you know, there's many an athlete that already think they know better. And the problem with that is that I think it's so difficult to stand outside yourself and to take any real good observations and be totally honest with yourself. It's sometimes, you know, the hardest person to train is me, even though I've been doing it for decades. It's still more difficult. Though if you're saying it to people 24/7, it actually isn't difficult, because I already know the answers. And it isn't like, oh, I need to myself, don't tell anybody else that they shouldn't do it. I think it's more a case of the more you understand about the bigger picture, and that you just enjoy the, you know, the easy times and the steady sessions and the skill element, you know, no pain, no gain almost sounds like, you know, without pain, there can't be any other way of obtaining benefits and gains. You know, it's almost like, you know, no pain, absolutely no possibility of getting any gains whatsoever, which is complete rubbish. Okay, there is some discomfort work, which, you know, you're well able to do it in training, in specific pre-competition, you know, simulations, or even building events, and ultimately at your sort of goal events, you know how to push yourself, but we aren't doing it now. And I think that would be probably what the early sprint triathlon Dan would look at and just go, whoa, I didn't realize quite how much I needed to wait for my body to be ready for it.
I think those two things are miles apart, like pre-sprint me and you know, multiple seasons, multiple races me now. But that's all learned behavior. I think to start with, part of the attraction of triathlon is that it's three sports, it's three sets of gear, it's three things to look at, it's three things to talk about and improve. But the downside of that is it's three things to understand, it's three things to master, it's three things to draw together. It's three sets of stuff to find out about. And if you read about these the disciplines and triathlon overall, you can find an opinion almost that supports any type of training, can't you? From mates in a tri club to mates who are just cyclists or just swimmers, from, you know, coaches, if you're lucky enough to have access to them, to magazines and podcasts, and my goodness, the amount of places you can look for information. And that's one of the other things I think I've learned, particularly from you, is you have to be able to be really strong at filtering stuff out rather than filtering it in. Because, and definitely before, you know, working with you and having your structured approach, would flip-flop between something that I'd read or something that I'd heard, or a more experienced triathlete had told me you need to do this session or it's all about that. And actually, a lot of the time, you just sort of jam loads of stuff in that doesn't work alongside each other, and get frustrated and don't move forward. In some cases with me, definitely just move, you know, frustration drove me backwards because I couldn't really see what it was that I needed to be doing. And actually, the fundamentals of it, they aren't very complicated, but they are hard to stick to. It's like there isn't magic in the basics. You know, you do the appropriate volume of training at the appropriate effort level, and you will sustain yourself to be able to probably enjoy the races that you've chosen to race. For fun, I might add. What it's supposed to be at the end of the day. It's a hobby. It's not. It's not life and death.
So, and this isn't a name and shame. And obviously, this is your observational kaleidoscope that you've looked out of for the past few years within multi sports. Mm. But and I don't always know, because I see some of this. But I don't always know that I'm looking at it through a slightly tainted angle, because I get the people where it's gone belly up. But how many people do you think that if you were to, with the experience you've got now, and you look at people, they might even be, you know, contemporary people that drop into certain sessions, or you touch base and find out about things. How many people do you think actually know what they're doing? And this could sound horribly, horribly sort of, but you know, how many, and of course it's not, you know, we're not on about, look, every single, you know, 1 second of your next performance matters. But I mean, there are people that do seem to get these things wrong and be a hodgepodge of, you know, never quite producing on a race despite training just volumes that are incredible, or they're up and down in their form and their injuries and stuff. How many people do you think actually are getting it right, and has that increased, or is that just that you've gravitated towards more people that train smarter?
That's a good question. I think a lot of the people I spend a lot of time with, you know, my closest tri friends, if you want to call them that, from my club and local and races that I've done, and people that I would see regularly, the majority of them get it, but that they are consistent triathletes. You know, they'll race several races a season, and they'll look forward to racing the next season. That's probably part of the reason they are enjoying themselves and achieving their goals, because they, you know, to use your terminology, they get it. They understand the balance between the training volumes and the home life balance and those kind of things, and they're able to be consistent because of that.
Yeah.
I reckon probably I see quite a lot of people, talk to quite a lot of people who come in and out. You know, occasionally they'll race, or they'll drift away and from triathlon into another sport. And I suspect probably sometimes that might be because they didn't get what they wanted from it. And it's difficult to see below the water, isn't it? But I reckon in many of those cases, it's probably because those balances weren't understood or weren't achieved. I don't think I could say, you know, half the people I see get it and half the people I see don't get it. And to your second part of your question about has that changed, I think more people understand the basics now. I think they're better and more accessibly, you know, recorded and reported. And I don't think there are really many, particularly endurance level triathletes and endurance level athletes, who don't understand that that balance between 80 to 90% of your training is base work. Almost everybody I would come across who races longer distance gets that, I reckon. So I would say it's better than it was, but I don't know if that's because I've gravitated towards people who think the same things that I do.
Yeah. And so is there a sense that, and it may be a yes or no or no comment, but, you know, are there groups that you wouldn't train with, or are there groups that you know that you think that's just a head bashing run session, or that's a group of bikies that seem to just go, you know, flat out for as long as possible? Are there things you can see that are obvious no goes? You just think, what? That's just not going to work for me.
Yeah, there are things that that are accessible to me that I've got, you know, friends who'll do them, who enjoy them, that I just avoid because they don't fit my either my training goals, or very often actually they just simply don't fit my calendar. Because I can't balance the time that these things run at with, you know, family or work commitments. But that's the biggest bit of balance, which we haven't even touched on. It's not a balance between your intensity and your training. It's a balance between your training and your life that is where the real battle is. But there are definitely
that's exactly where the cursor is on my. On my notes that we sent back
we're so in sync that it just naturally falls.
Well, it is number four. How do you keep the balance of family and work and training? Because I think that not just, you know, when you do the training, but how you do the training makes you a better person to be around in the family, a person that is going to contribute to work fully because your head isn't spinning and you're not still trying to think or overthink a session or cram in another session. So I think actually training, shall we call it smarter, actually helps you with the balance. Now, how do you personally keep balance?
This is probably the thing I got wrong the most when I first started, the balance between not so much work and training, but home and training. So when I first started, I was really excitable. It was often my training sessions were the highlight of my day or the thing I thought about the most. And I really recognise now, after some early and quite robust feedback from my family, which was well deserved, that I've got my priorities occasionally were going in the wrong direction. And I'm not saying I get it right all the time now, because, you know, I still intend to race. That middle and long distance is quite demanding. I do have to find time for it, but I definitely recognise that it could be a killer to the sport, or, you know, a dent to family relationships. So I'd to say a massive thank you to my wife and my boys and my family who have been more supportive than probably I've deserved at certain times. But in terms of maintaining the balance, I guess practically, I'm really organized type of person. You know, I have an Outlook calendar that kind of runs my week. And one of the sort of the best practical tips I've got is I put all of my weekly booked things, you know, whether they're meetings, family things, taking the kids to their athletics training or doing a training session, I put them all in one calendar. So whenever I am looking at my week, I can see exactly what I've got scheduled, what I'm trying to schedule where and when. So you give me my my week's menu of stuff and I shuffle it around on our diary. But at the same time, I also put it in the one diary that I use for coordinating work and home together. And that massively helps me. I colour them differently. That's a very boring practical detail, but orange in my diary is a training event. Purple is a family event and blue is a work meeting. So I can sort of shuffle the things around and I can help prioritize from that point of view. That helps me, like, you know, very boring, but it helps me really practically try and shuffle stuff around, and also helps me spot, like, if I'm intending to do a certain training session, but I've got to take a client out for lunch and I've got a run in the evening, it's probably not going to happen. So those things will end up getting shuffled around. So that definitely... that definitely helps. The other thing I try to do, I don't always achieve it, Particularly if my wife listens to this, I realize I don't always achieve it. I try to direct as much training as possible during the week and away from the weekend. And now I know a lot of people can't do that. I work locally, which is great. I used to commute. I was thinking the other day, actually, if I was still commuting from Suffolk to London 5 days a week, I just simply wouldn't be able to do this sport. Just there wouldn't be the energy or the time. But because I live locally, I've got no commute. I've got perhaps a bit more time in my day than the other people who might be commuting. And also because I sort of work for myself, I've probably got more flexibility on my weekdays than other people might have, and I do recognize that. But my trick is to try and pack out my week, particularly with shorter sessions before work, lunchtime, and after work. And a lot of days I'll have two sessions, one at lunchtime and one after work, or one before work and one at lunchtime. And that ticks off a lot of the shorter focus sessions that you might set me for the week. So I try and avoid the weekends, and if I am doing something at the weekend, I'll make sure it's that my wife and kids know that I'm intending to do that, and I'll try wherever possible to try and make sure that it doesn't take me away from something they might want me doing or to do with them, that sort of thing. It's pretty basic, really. It's more about that part of it is more about organisation. And then once you've organised things, trying to stick to it as much as you can, but not worrying if things have to slip.
Yeah, and I always say, I mean, there's 2 points from the certainly from the coaching perspective. I always think a menu works better than fixing you to say, no, Dan, you've got to do that run on Thursday morning, because no, you don't.
Absolutely, absolutely right. Yep.
You don't have to do it on a Thursday morning. Okay, there are certain, venues, perhaps open water facilities, certain swimming pools, where your time frame has to align, and that can be difficult at times. But I think that being able to shuffle things around and not thinking that one session in a week is it's so critical that if it isn't done, the whole week falls down, and oh, what's the hell in doing all of this. And I've had
But
people,
it.
that they've come back to me and said, I couldn't get it done on Thursday or Friday. So on Saturday I did this one, and this one, oh, and this one. And they literally have spent, their entire day trying to catch up. And I'm like, we haven't got to get it all done. A, you're not going to be super popular or even be super energetic after a day of trying to do four things that were meant to be spread over various days. But also, there isn't any one key thing, because even if you don't do a long bike ride, well, that wasn't what the whole week was leveraged around. And all the other things you did manage to do are the positives, and therefore you don't have to, this idea, even with the menu that I give you, some people beat themselves up and say, oh, I couldn't get these two things done. Okay, well, if you don't get them done this week, okay, that may be a rest in those muscle groups, and you'll be keen to do it next week. But if it doesn't happen the week after, then we're starting to see something that you're trying to push a round peg into a square hole. We have to rethink that and say, why aren't those sessions happening? Because that's twice in a, in a row, and let's try and work that out. But you know what? Even if you missed it for 2 weeks, doesn't matter. The third week, the biggest priority is quite obvious that week from the menu perspective, which is what you haven't done for the last 2 weeks. Can you still hear me, Dan? Hello? I can hear you now, Dan. Yeah, sorry. Yeah,
Yeah,
you just
sorry.
came
I
away.
think ironically, you were talking about how you balance all the things out. Somebody's calling my work phone whilst I'm trying to talk to you. I
Okay,
think that's what cut us off, but they've gone now. Definitely, if you were prescriptive with me, that session's got to be done that day, and that has to follow, and then that one has to follow that one, it would have fallen apart because I just can't. I haven't got that much control over my life. And the other thing I would build from what you were saying there is having a broader plan, say a goal in the block, which for you and me is 4 weeks worth of training, that then allows you to sort of shuffle within the block. So sometimes when I'm really busy, or I've got holidays or that sort of thing booked in, And I know that certain weeks are going to be a challenge. I lift up and look at the 4 week block and try and we'll set a goal for what we want to achieve or work on within the block as a whole. And that allows me to relax a bit if I've got a very light week training wise, because I've got demands elsewhere. I think that definitely helps.
Yeah. And it was the balance. I was going to say the balance is the key to what you're trying to do there. You're trying to look at, you know, at the 4 weeks and say, well, if that all goes well, it doesn't matter about this going out of kilter. And when it's, you know, when it's like you've hinted on, you know, sometimes the balance has to be knocked back into shape, and it's normally through discussions or things obviously not going right. And now I've had, and it's not just one occasion where people, going back to this whole, you know, how hard people train and how often they train, but they've trained too hard. They've suppressed, even to the extent of, you know, male athletes significantly suppressing their testosterone to a point where it's starting to become a big issue. And you get them to slow down, you get them to rethink the volumes they think they need to do. And they've actually passed messages back to me and said, my wife has something to say to you. And I'm like, what do you mean your wife has something to say? Oh, she just wants to say, thank you for getting my husband back. And twice minimum, I know that's happened. And it's that kind of, you know, it's the goosebump moment where you think, wow, that is a scary prospect that people can train themselves so far out of balance.
Yeah.
That they aren't thinking family, work, training. They think training, training, training. And oh, well, what else have I got to do today? And not, it doesn't really figure from the starting point of sort of, hey, let's keep this. It might be different if you're, you know, your name is you know, dropping a famous name now, you know, your person X. Well, of course, their training is their livelihood. It's what they're known for. It's what they're building to their next, you know, I don't know, Formula One or Ironman or World Cup, whatever, they're defined by it. And I think partly back to what you've said about, you know, the amount of information that's around, I think we have to watch amateur athletes getting sucked into a professional mindset where they almost start to believe that every possible, you know, INEOS marginal gain and British Athletics, you know, track session and all this kind of stuff. They've almost got too much information and start thinking in the way that clearly an elite athlete will look at every 1%, because five of those can make the difference between a, you know, not even a podium. That makes a difference as to whether you even get anywhere near qualifying to be going to a certain championship. And so I do think that part of the filtering out of too much information about everything you could do to get better has to be part of that balance. Otherwise you could be, you know, reading so much about, you know, how you need to, you know, buy yourself an altitude tent and stick it over the top of your, you know, top of your bed and sleep in altitude for the next 6 months, because that's so important to your, you know, to your next half Ironman or whatever, only to find that the complete illogical imbalance of that in the real world is such that I think, you know, it may not even be training groups sometimes that are wrong. Sometimes I think the whole seriousness of some athletes means that they, you know, they are not an elite athlete, but they're trying to approach it in such a way that it is just too serious. Like you said earlier, there's got to be some fun in it.
Yeah, definitely. At the end of the day, it's a hobby for 99.5% of the people who do it. So, it doesn't need to be taken that seriously. But it is a breeding ground for attracting people who do take stuff like this seriously. That's for sure.
Yeah, but it's also positive. You know, I deal with a lot of positive people, because people that are wanting to, you know, anything from just literally people that just want guided fitness. They're not even going for, you know, a sprint try. They want guided fitness to be able to just juggle the background of doing different activities. Right, there are people that say, I want to qualify for, you know, this particular race, or I want to, you know, do this for my particular Ironman. Flipping that around, where do you want to go in 10 years? And that sounds bizarre to talk to somebody that this is your hobby, but is there anything that you've kind of thought about where, you know, this goes to some, you know, weird and wonderful direction? Some people say, oh, I've always wanted to do, you know, Lands End, John O'Groats, so I definitely want to, you know, I want to run London because I just want to experience it, or I want to, you know, go to Berlin and stand at the finish line and see somebody break 2 hours. I mean, there's certain things within endurance that you want to tick off the list.
Oh, there definitely are. And that's why we're still working on it. There, I guess I probably would, 10 years, I don't know. I mean, if I'm still interested and fit enough to be completing triathlons in 10 years' time, I'd be absolutely delighted. And I think that at that point, I'll finally be satisfied with just getting to the line. But, you know, that may not be true. I've got friends who are in that age bracket who do compete very, very, very well. So there's definitely legs in it. My shorter term goals, probably this season's goals, I would like to duck under 5 hours for a half and under 11 for a full for this year. So that's something we're working on. We got what we have been working on the last couple of years. We got very close last year, and I'm feeling like hopefully this will be the year. I know it's difficult to say. I feel like when I've done those, then the standard middle and Ironman circuit, I might start to replace that with some of the more adventurous races. I did one more adventure type try a couple of seasons back up at Helvellyn, and that's quite different. You know, it's quite a hilly rise. It was a lovely lake swim and a sort of fell running scramble type thing, and it was so different. It was back to being an event rather than being a race, and there's definitely some charm in that for me, not having to worry too much about time or clock watching as you're going around. So I think I probably would like to do a bit more adventure racing. That's probably what I'd say. Get a bit faster on the standard regular courses, and then do some more interesting stuff. But beyond that, I haven't really got any set priorities. But once we've done those, rest assured, there'll be a new set of priorities in place.
I tell you why I think that is that most of the time it's back to what I said, is that in a sense, a coach is guiding a personality. We rarely go from one type of person to another. There have been, you know, when people do these massive transformations, that you would hope that, you know, if they've gone from 15 stone to 11 and they feel great and that's who they want to be, fine. Some people actually are happy at 15 stone and don't want to do triathlon, and that has to always be considered, that, you know, there are these people that come into it, do it, and immediately bounce back out and go, we shouldn't all presume that everybody else's goal is aligned with ours, and therefore why would some people want to do it? They look at it and scratch their head and say, what the hell are you doing that for? But if people find bit new age, but if people find themselves through activities and hobbies and that makes them happier, great, because that's what you want. And I think when you're into these endurance tasks, there are goals that you can attain that are quite, they're almost like quite nice things to say, great, I challenged myself, I did the things that I needed to, and lo and behold, I've got what I wanted. I think it's maybe the slightly out of kilter people that, you know, they do five and go, yeah, but I need to do a 450 really. And, that next 10 minutes, let's face it, if you don't do five, it's not actually game over. It's not, that's a total waste. You haven't done, under five. Obviously, if you put, you know, if Nike spend, millions to do that first sub two project, put three athletes and, one gets within 25 seconds, one does a PB and one doesn't really produce what they thought. Obviously, that is a public, like, oops, well, we kind of did it, we kind of didn't, and one didn't make it and we thought they would. And that's obviously a harsher and more difficult thing to then marry up and say, what do we do? And obviously in Kipchoge's case, he went on to, you know, break sub two with an even more refined knowledge about what they do. And I think that's what happens with people that are into endurance. The more you do it, the more you take lessons and things that you've endured but also enjoyed and say, oh yeah, actually I might try and, I don't know, run a 35-mile ultra, or do you know what I want to, you know, I want to do a, you know, a 12-hour time trial, or I want to do whatever. And it doesn't always have to be that it's like you've said about it just becomes an event. You go from necessarily competing it actually to just completing it. And there was plenty of people on the start line that will do a half Ironman. All they're there to do is to complete it.
Yeah.
They do not have this, as you know, many of us have, they do not have this nagging thing pushing them, going, go faster. Come on. See what you can do. They just have this, oh yeah, I've spent my money. I'm just going to do this. There's nothing on an entry form that says you are absolutely obligated to go the fastest you possibly can.
Yeah.
Not at all. If somebody wants value for money and wants to take as long as possible,
take longer.
Yep. You know, and there's, you know, there's, I think there's plenty of scope for saying enjoyment is not always, you know, high enjoyment is for the people doing faster times and low enjoyment is for the people that are doing slower times. I think there's probably a bell curve that, you know, people can be doing fast times but very unhappy, or doing, you know, moderate times but really pleased to be back doing it, because the last time they did it, you know, they were 10 years younger, and they've just completed something that, again, was I don't think we all need to get these you know, medals and t-shirts and certificates as accolades of, oh great, at last I'm a human being that is okay. I just think they are things that help us in those other work, family, and kind of being who we are. And when it's in balance, it absolutely makes people into better individuals, because they are more positive, they are hopefully, fingers crossed, healthier, and also if they're in balance, they do think about other things, not just their, you know, next goal that absolutely the whole of the world has to stop to watch them. If you're Kipchoge, a lot of the world did watch sub two, and that was amazing. But I do think there's, especially with social media, there's a lot of people that think, you know, some of the other 8 billion people on the planet really give just a monkeys about it, and they don't. And it almost like it makes it self-fulfilling. Oh, this is really important. This is really important because, you know, my 100 followers or the people that I know, oh, they're going to be so, you know, I've really got to do this. And I think we have to, and we can't measure it because it's an internal factor. We have to look at how happy somebody is about what they're doing. Because if they're not happy, it doesn't matter that they say, oh, I did 9 hours 45 and you know, I did that Ironman. Well, yeah, but, you know, did the family, work, etc. balance go so out of kilter that it wasn't worth that? And also, what, you know, what do you do next? Because life doesn't stop. If you break five, brilliant. It's well possible. But it's, how do you then manifest this positive kind of, almost, you know, eventually almost gratitude of being able to do these things and mold yourself into the next thing, which for pro athletes must be difficult, because they go for these extreme highs. And if they then retire, you think, wow, that's a hell of a big drop off to then be a former, you know, hour record holder or a former Manchester United player. You know, they're no longer able to redefine themselves in what they were best known as.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is a sport, it's quite personal, because when you've got a goal for a race, because nobody really cares to the level that you do, and most people don't care at all, is how I would sum that up. I mean, I care about what I'm doing. Lucky I've got you to talk to, you care as well. But beyond that, it's a very personal thing. Most people will, you know, not be aware of the sport. Those that are aware of the sport will have some idea what's going on. But the amount of hours and minutes it took you to do a particular course is irrelevant to them, but can become all consuming to us. So that is something I'm trying to come away from. Having said that, you know, my goals are to go faster. Once those benchmarks are done, I feel like maybe I can find a bit more enjoyment than I currently already do in the other things, you know, the endurance runs and the adventure tries and the stuff that goes on around the side. Would be nice to make those things the middle, I guess.
Yeah. Not defined just by the clock.
Absolutely undefined. One of the most enjoyable races, although it was quite hard, that I've had recently was Ironman Wales this year.
That's right, yeah.
When my Garmin got knocked off in the swim. So I then had the pleasure of doing the rest of the course without any incoming data, other than the church clock on the run. And actually, it's massively freeing. We weren't trying to do anything massive in that race, other than really, you know, finish it, you know, complete it in a decent way. But being free of the data, and that constant bleep telling you you're going too fast or you're going too slow or whatever, it's actually really quite nice. It'd be really nice just to tackle those things just for the love of it.
But I think within your modesty, you hadn't long got over COVID, and we were desperately trying to get you ready for something that was looking very difficult, even with a good prevailing wind.
And yeah, there was that.
You know, maybe the triathlon gods, you know, knock that watch off your wrist in the swim. It's down there somewhere on the floor. Somebody wants to find it in the
swim.
Yeah.
Go down to Tenby Bay. There's a Garmin floating around down there somewhere.
Yeah, but it in a way helped you, although we'd immediately, and I think this is very much a lesson for the beginner, we'd immediately gone from, you know, you're going to compete with these particular parameters to, right, you know, we need to set completion such that the parameters of normally edging your bets and knowing exactly what you were going to be doing and how long it was going to take. Yeah, it meant it was longer, but that course was longer than your PB course anyway, whether you did it, you know, in a build back from a recent COVID or whether you did it at the height of fitness. People don't get PBs there compared to what they do on some of the, you know, flatter courses. But even in registering it back to a completion versus a competing moment, it still was a sort of blessing not to have those numbers. And sometimes that does go back, you know, to the basics of triathlon, where you can often see many a picture and people weren't wearing watches. They maybe, particularly as I can remember the first Avocet cycle computers that came along, and you know, up to then you didn't have any numbers, you just kind of went out, and if you or somebody had driven roughly that direction, you knew roughly how far it was, and that was what you did. And you didn't have this, oh, I'm doing this amount of wattage. I've got, you know, this heart rate. I've got this cadence. Another message has come in on my screen that somebody's just sent me about something, and I've got a text about work or something when you're meant to be out, you know, trying kind of just riding. So I think the metrics bit can help, but it can hinder. And in getting through Wales, which I think was probably one of the strong points of showing how you did apply yourself, because you weren't in the best of pre-race sort of setups. It wasn't this, oh, this tape is going so well, this is going to be, you know, smash it out the court kind of scenario.
And for
that's
sure.
that's probably where you do pull upon this, do you know what, bigger picture right now is not to, you know, not to panic, just to do, you know, do the next 5 miles on the bike, get this done, do this bit, and it will all eventually, you know, come good by the fact that you just find yourself, okay, not looking at your watch and, you know, charging down the finish chute thinking, am I going to get that goal? You got it done, and you got it done, and, you know, you didn't completely implode. So your body did well to get it done in that scenario.
It's amazing how much of the, muscle memory, motor memory, because even though I knew I wasn't wearing a watch, every small interval of time I glanced down at my wrist, saw nothing but skin and hair. Right, you're not wearing a watch, stop looking at it. Okay, a few minutes later I found myself glancing down at my wrist. That pretty much persisted all the way around, even though I clearly knew there was nothing there.
Dan, there were people that said, they're going, that guy thinks he's got a watch on, you know.
Well, I did to start with, how, you know, what on earth am I going to do? How am I going to know what's going on? Blah, 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 blah. So I asked the marshal running out of traffic, what time is it? He said to me, don't worry, you've got plenty of time. I was like, no, that's not what I'm asking. I want to know what time it is. It's quarter to four. I was like, right, brilliant. And I ran on a bit like, what am I going to do with that information? How am I going to ask everybody every 5 minutes or so, what time is it? And
And you assume that they've got the time right, because there's many a person that has a clock or a watch that's, you know, 10 minutes fast, or they don't quite know, whatever. And that's where the whole splits. And I see it from the other angle, you know, as a coach watching, sometimes, you know, people get off the bike, you think, oh, great, they're off the bike, they started running. And then you'll have this information where they go, oh, yeah, they're doing just about their five, I don't know, 5:45, 6 minute kilometers. Great, that's brilliant. The next one you go, it's 8. Oh no, they've not blown up. And then suddenly you go, oh, they've done a 4:50. It's like, oh, okay. So they've got the, you know, the timing, Matt, is not in the right place. And the information, which we assume, of course, is always right. People will question themselves before they question the, you know, oh yeah, but I, you know, I've definitely got 226 heart rate. No, you're sure you're not actually taking data from something else nearby and your watch is picking it up. You know, almost like people will not believe their body or the outside information should be questioned. And therefore you can get into troubles. Oh, they said it was 20 past four. Oh, they said it's 20 past five. That shouldn't have taken me an hour. And then of course that person worries about stuff. Whereas if you're on a completion, you could have gone right the way to the end of the race time. I know you wouldn't want to be out there that long, but you know, it's almost like, you know, that Marshall saying you've got lots of time. Actually, they're right, because you have got lots of time. There's loads of people behind you that will be desperate to try and make the cutoff. They're way, way, way behind, you know, the schedule to easily have, you know, quite a few hours if you like, buffer before things go belly up. If you could, this is the tricky one. If you could put the, you know, the biggest mistake from which you've learned and therefore has helped your endurance sports, both from a training and sort of challenging yourself in events perspective, what do you think it is? And what was the thing early on you think, if only that was something that I'd known at that point in time?
I feel like we might have already talked about this, but there's two things for me. The first is having a plan, a broad plan and a specific plan, and having those two things lined up. And the second thing is about not understanding what you need to be training. So that's the not training too hard thing, but also training appropriately. So on your own when you need to, your own sessions when you need to, not listening to the noise and opinions that will take you off your own track. Actually, I guess that's all one point, isn't it? Have a plan, I guess. Have a plan. That's what I would say.
I didn't put this one down because this is the surprise question. Right. Within your desert island swim, bike and run, what three things for swim, bike and run would you have, such that if you had to be training, and this desert island has, you know, it's got a pool and it's got open water, it's got an indoor train if you really want to ride indoors, but it's also got outdoors, and you've got the ability to run or even deep water run, dare I say it, what would be your three objects that you would take to this triathlon desert island?
I mean, you'd have three.
Oh, only three. Yeah, absolutely,
only three. Well,
this is back to basics.
Now, this is an important one. And having had my trunks split at my most
recent squad. Clothing's taken care of. Don't worry about
it. I was going to ask, is there anybody else on the desert island? In which case we could do away with the trunks. I would say for the swim, I would absolutely want, I don't know, swim's quite simple, isn't it? I would say goggles. Let's have some goggles, because I don't really like swimming without goggles.
What's your favorite goggles? What works for you and your eye socket shape and stuff?
I buy Aquasphere Cayman goggles. They cost about £15. They are the least glamorous, but they fit me brilliantly. They're the most robust. And every time they wear out, you can buy another one, and it doesn't matter if you lose them. So I take a pair of those. That's my go-to goggles. I think if I'm on a desert island on my own and I'm stuck there, I probably take my mountain bike.
MTB, and, that makes sense.
I do love a bit of trail riding. I'm into it at the moment. It just gives you, it's a non non-metric type way to spend your time, but it keeps you fit, so I'd love that. And then run wise I definitely wouldn't take my Garmin, having just extolled the virtues of running without any data. I would take a nice comfy pair of probably Adidas Ultra Boosts, which is a trainer I prefer to run in, and that would see me very happy for quite a long time, I think.
Okay, right. So that's that was the bit I didn't put on the plan. So you've made that up very very well. So thanks, Dan, because you know it's good insight to get. I can't call you real world because you know professional athletes are real world, and people that are in the sport through I don't know companies or products or whatever are real people. But I think when you're doing it as your you know, as your hobby, and you know, you enjoy it, you do it well. You've executed really good progressive seasons. It's actually just quite nice to sort of look a bit, as I said early on, you know, to drill down and just see the sort of things. And it does seem to be almost summed up by, you know, a plan that's balanced, and you enjoy it. And that's kind of, you know, a basic thing, but and that's a very difficult thing to define, but it seems as though that's the way to do it. And yet, if that isn't done right, there isn't really a plan, people aren't balanced, and it is way too important, well, then that's where we get the problems coming in.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's been good fun. Thank you very much for having me.
No, thank you, Dan. It's great to have your insights. And yeah, well, I'll be sending the taxi round to get you to the desert island with your Aquaspheres, your MTB, your Ultra Boosts, and you can go and have a nice. We'll only leave you there for a month, all right? Just a month of sort of, you know, swim, bike, and run on a desert island.
That I was just looking out over the wet Suffolk countryside this morning. That sounds ideal. Let's do it.
Brilliant,
All right.
brilliant.
Thanks,
Okay,
mate.
Dan,
Take
take
care. See
care.
you soon. Bye.
Bye bye.